This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hey, this is Arvind Yuvaraj, and I have a question for you. What is the future of internet? I know, it's a big question with even bigger answers, most probably more complicated, more complex answers. But that's exactly what the people at the Imagineering Institute are trying to invent day in and day out with experiments and inventions and innovations that are so bizarre that they sound like they came out of a sci-fi TV series. And now, the Institute is the first independent, multidisciplinary internet and digital media research and development space, which is also an entrepreneurial incubation space for startups. But then there's also this thing called the Hangout.
Okay, so the Hangout is a business incubator, and to get to the Hangout, you have to start off with the Imagineering Institute. So what happened about 2 years ago, Kazana went to it.
The voice you just heard was Charles Thomas. He is the CEO at The Hangout, and I caught up with him during the Echelon 2017 conference in Penang to talk about the Imagineering Institute, which is the brainchild of one Professor Adrian David Chiok from the Mixed Reality Lab. Now, the Imagineering Institute itself is the world's first startup space located inside a research facility, and it also emphasizes on innovation above monetization in order to allow creativity to run wild and free.
Kazana went to a Davos meeting in Switzerland and saw a young global leader, young guy called Dr. Adrian David Chiok give a talk. And he's like a very brilliant research scientist, and there was a connection because Adrian, although he grew up in Australia, his dad was born and grew up in KL. And so Adrian came back and started a research lab, and it's Blue Sky Quantum Step Research. Anything he is doing has nothing to do with monetization. And he's always looking, he wants people to think 20 to 40 years in the future. But he says, what if I take this research lab and I create a business side to it that can make revenue, that could actually bring revenue back to the lab and make this a self-sustainable company? And so the first step was he wanted to make a business incubator. But as it turns out, incubating businesses is more of a long-term thing, and to get any of this going, it's a minimum 3 years before you start to see the traction, you start to get the results. You could actually even have, I mean, we're working on one right now in it's our first cohort, but even if they do well, they're worth money unless they end up having an exit. You actually don't have real money, you just have an asset. And technically, we don't really want to exit. We just want them to grow, bootstrap, and just grow on their own. So then we discussed it further, and we realized that with all the ideas that Adrian's working on and all the connections we're making developing the business incubator, we could actually create innovation services to corporations, and that's like a really kind of cool area, and now we got a blue ocean, and that's what we're all about. We're trying to find ways that you find areas that you can create innovation and make money. And so our areas of innovation, which also relate to the types of startups that we incubate, relate to artificial intelligence, machine learning, the Internet of Things, virtual reality, augmented reality. And we're working a lot with chatbots and robots. We're actually working with a group who make really kind of cool robots, and we produce the chatbots that animate the robots. So that's the kind of stuff that we're doing. And our cohort one, which is just two startups, one is working in virtual reality, 360-degree virtual reality for real estate, and the second one is automating the recycling process in Southeast Asia.
You're the world's first startup space inside a research facility. So what is the advantage of having that location, of having it inside a research facility?
Okay, that is pretty interesting because we're, in a sense, what I've just described, we're a startup ourselves, so we keep dissecting this, and one of the questions is, should we split these two things apart and have them stand alone? And that's where it becomes clear. The stuff that's happening on the research side, it's, as I say, that no one in the research side is allowed to think of monetization except me. So I get to walk in there, and I am actually seeing a lot of new ideas coming out that are actually applicable right now. And there's a reason for that, which is about IoT. And the other thing is there's actually a couple of things that have they never expected to, but have popped out as products that we could use. And the third thing is when I'm developing the incubator concepts and the startups, we're actually taking the forecasting side of what the lab is doing to actually create a newer and more differentiated product for the startup itself. Because a lot of the startups, they're usually pushing into markets that already exist. In worst case, or a lot of them seem to push into crowded markets already. And we call those copycats, and we hate doing those. Like the guys that are advisors who actually oversee these, if they see a copycat concept, they just walk away. But if I could actually, for instance, take the VR Genie guys, for example, who are our VR group, we're adding chatbots and machine learning to the development of how the real estate information goes on the page and what comes to the front and what are you looking for. And actually, even you can look at the site and your eyeballs will actually be able to click things on your screen to actually move around the site, and all these kind of cool new things that are coming to the forefront, we can actually be the first guys out with them. I'm seeing that happened already. It's happening already.
And the thing you're talking about uses VR. So a person, say, sitting in an office could see their teammate, what their teammate is looking at on, let's say, a remote site itself.
Yeah, that's correct. So, and this is the thing about this corporate innovation services is what we're really doing is we're helping the corporation jump the technological gap to go to the next level. If they don't do that themselves, someone's going to disrupt them, right? But there's no reason why they can't actually disrupt themselves before someone else does that. And the example with the VR for real estate is every real estate guy out there, he wants to go to the VR 360 because for the last, I don't know how many years, all he has had is a model in the showroom and a brochure. And then how many units can he sell a month is the goal. If you add one more thing that actually could entice someone to seal a deal, and this is a perfect example because they really get to see what it looks like in the place. If I'm in here, if I'm in JB, or if I'm in KL or Penang, and I'm looking in Colorado, and I'm actually looking at people walking through the space of a house I'm interested in, I can look out the window and see someone skiing down a ski slope. I can see someone pulling a cake out of the oven. I can see the kids running out in the backyard with the dog. All these things might just be that one little thing that clinches the deal. The only thing about the real estate guy, and we're looking at it right now, is he doesn't know how does he get to that level. He thinks, I got to buy some sort of a neural network because it's such a computer heavy thing to actually have 3D, like even to go 3D VR through the internet is heavy. It could take all night to send some of this stuff through. And where do you get the glasses? Do you get Oculus Rift? It's really expensive. It's a really killer thing to hook the glasses to the computer because now your customer's tied by a wire. And so our guys actually have simplified it to the fact that you don't even need any of that equipment. You can do it with your phone through certain applications that groups like Google are making. And you could actually be up on the site with a 3D, with a virtual video in 24 hours. That's going to be their calling card when they go out, which I think they're going to kind of go out in the market next month with it.
Now, there was, do you watch Black Mirror?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was an episode of Black Mirror, I think it's in the later season, where the character played by Bryce Dallas Howard goes to view a house, and the agent shows her what her life in that new house could look like via hologram. So it's a new way of marketing. Instead of just looking at a brochure, the agent shows them what the neighborhood could look like and what their life could look like in this new house using nothing but VR and augmented reality and just holographic images.
Oh no, Black Mirror is the coolest thing I've come across. The stuff, how it's related to the stuff that we do is actually really cool. And our favorite one is the email. In fact, the email where the boyfriend dies and he comes back on email. Well, the chatbot guys on the, we have a group, very, very brilliant research scientists actually from Serbia, who's using big data and chatbots to create chatbots that are your persona based on the last 5 years of your email. So everything you've ever said or done on your email, he can make into a chatbot that actually will, through machine learning and our neural network, will answer a question the way you do. And so they're actually going to take, they're going to get your persona off your email, mine off mine, and then they can talk together. And even though you and I may or may not have even met, we can see what kind of discussion we would have. So, they're working on that. So it's all Black Mirror everywhere in our office. It's great.
Imagine using that for interviews. I mean, like if you could talk to like a holographic version of your boss, or I mean, even the other way around, if managers could talk to like the candidate and like practice what you might ask or practice what you might answer the night before, right?
Well, that's right. If you could actually the persona of the candidate you're going to talk to, and you can practice the night before by talking to the persona, and then it might bring up a better discussion to develop ideas for the real conversation.
I'm chatting with Charles Thomas. He is the CEO of The Hangout and one of the core people behind the Imagineering Institute in Iskandar Nusa Jaya, Johor. So we've got a lot of stuff to cover after this. We've got to get some music and messages in, but there's more coming up after the break, so stick around. This is Enterprise, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Boyish 40-something millionaires. BFM 89.9.
And we are back on Enterprise. This is Arvind Yuvaraj. And today's guest is Charles Thomas, who I caught up with in Penang during Echelon 2017. We're just chatting about the Imagineering Institute. I think I mentioned before how cool that name is. It's an innovative project by Professor Adrian Chiok that empowers and encourages other innovations inside its startup space / research facility. Yeah, you didn't hear that wrong. It's a startup space inside a research facility. Your motto or your mantra is invent the future of internet. What do you think is the future of the internet?
Well, we have a direct tie to this. This Adrian's idea is to invent the future of the internet, and his major area that he's been developing is to digitize the senses, meaning that he wants to have a discussion on your phone where you get taste and smell in a phone call. And what he's actually doing, he says now, right now we have a phone call or we're actually texting, we're just exchanging data on our phone, and what he wants to do is exchange experiences. So in the lab right now, we're mapping with very low current, we're mapping the tongue and the olfactory bulb. So we're going around the tongue and we're trying to find out a very low surges of electricity, I think it's all DC current, will actually elicit taste. And they found lemony, sour, sweet, and there's a couple of others that have kind of strange names to them. But now they're actually putting wires up the nose. We're just starting this now to actually find out if we put the current on cells, if it will stimulate a smell. And we're just at the very beginning. I think we put through about 20 people. This is one of our ideas that he says is maybe 20 years in the future, we will be doing this. 20 years in the future, you're going to be, your phone actually will be your shirt. If you tie this idea I have with the ideas we have on wearables, you'll be walking down the street, and before she even says anything, you'll know your mom's about to call you because you can smell her cooking your favorite dish. And you go, "Hi, Mom, what are you doing?" But it will be in the clothing, right?
That's a little frightening, to be completely honest. I mean, a little scary to think about.
Yeah, I guess I don't find them frightening anymore. I never found them frightening. There are things that get creepy, such as the robots. We're making robots that are so lifelike. When you see a robot, there's this thing called the uncanny valley, and we're always talking about, okay, let's stay away from the uncanny valley and let's like keep this stuff moving. But I find it exciting, interesting. The fellow was just saying in the hospital talk they just had, where it's actually going to be you and your TV, and it's going to be a much broader group of doctors that you have access to. I find this exciting. Now, that's why I'm here with these guys. That's why this is what I do for a living, is because when I saw what Adrian's put together, this is what I probably needed to be a part of. If it wasn't here, it was probably going to be somewhere else.
So technically, if you could trigger taste, you could also be virtually eating food, but not physically eating anything at all. So your mind could be believing that you're eating something, but you aren't actually eating anything or putting anything in your mouth at all.
The food is a big one, because they get into multi-sensory perception concepts. And right now, one that I love, and again, I talk about ideas that they're not supposed to have any monetary value. This is why I like this. They're working with one of the top chefs in the world, Chef Andoni from Mugaritz in Spain, and they are going to make a levitating meal. So we're making a table. We've actually developed the ability to levitate through magnets, and we are now going to have a meal where, as you're eating, all the plates are just moving around at your will. It's going to be controlled, but if you want to say pass the peas, you'll just say pass the peas, and it'll just go across the table. But they want to know if they're eating a meal and everything's floating and the silverware will have a different weight to it, will it change the sensory perception of the meal you're eating? So there's a lot of people interested in that area of science as well, and so we do a lot of work there. We're about to do a food sensory concept for the Singapore Science Center. I think it's going to open in about 6 months. We're working on that right now.
What do you look for when collaborating with someone or taking in an aspiring startup or founder? Like, what is the criteria?
Well, if you have an idea, we actually have a form that we fill out that has about probably 30 questions, but it's because people have an idea, like you and I might have an idea, most people, and there's no background to it or no full understanding of what are the implications of this idea. So we fill out a form, an application form that is set up to make sure they've thought the whole thing through. It includes, who are you working with? Is this your friend? Are they going to stay around a long time? What is the split up in the percentages of the company? Who are your biggest competitors? And that's the first step. If it comes in, we take a look at it, and if it makes sense, and we think that from our viewpoint, there could be a market here and this could be a business, then we will ask them to come in and work on it in our lab for a month.
What's the biggest mistake people make when getting into this phase of their research and development? Like, is it unchecked expectations, or, you know, do they crash and burn too low too soon? Or
I think, and this is, I come from Toronto, Canada, and in Toronto, when we're working with the startups, they come in, they already know all the skills, the programming, they can make their own apps and everything. And then secondly, they come up with the idea. In Malaysia, the big kind of cultural flip-flop is that they have an idea with just like no skills at the back, right? So what we did, I kind of figured that out very quickly, that as part of going through our incubator, I give them what technically can be done in 5 weeks is a foundation course on startup business. And the course is actually really set up to one, make sure that you've researched around the world what's happening in your market. And number two, make sure that it's a need that someone wants. If someone actually wants this thing you're making. And then the next thing, I want them to validate that people will buy it and pay for it. And then the last thing is we set up the business plan to that. In I think it's mainly directed at investors, that you could actually sell this to an investor, and if you the biggest mistake I see is that the people that come in don't pick up those main areas, and if you do, it's always been a no brainer to me. I mean, I've probably worked on 1,000 businesses on our own, and anyone I worked with all knew that these were part of the pieces to get from A to B. But when we start off with young people who are, a lot of them are just coming out of like an art course or philosophy or whatever, so they're not expected to know this, but they don't pick it up that quickly. I mean, one of the we do a lot of hackathons and we're judges. The favorite question of the judge, and it's almost a bit of a joke, at the end of it they show you what they're doing, and we say to them, have you Googled to see if someone else has done this before? And it's almost always just say no, which is funny because I'm from the older generation where I research like everything before I do something. But for once in our life, we have at our fingertips the ability to know if someone's done this. But that's one of the biggest mistakes I see that people don't look at.
Okay. Why set up a lab like this in Malaysia? Like, what does the startup in digital media or the future of internet look like over here?
Well, number one, I think I split the world into three. It's either the Americas, Europe, and Southeast Asia. And without a doubt, Southeast Asia is a place to be right now. It's a place that will grow the most. You have China and India. They grow at like 7%, where the U.S. is growing at like 1.5%. So this is a place to be. And if I want to build something, I'm trying actually, because I'm in Malaysia, to build Malaysia and to make my products here, but I'm always going to be sucked into Shenzhen, but so be it. But that is the place in the world to get things made right now, and that's where a lot of the technology and the creativity is just totally unsurpassable. I don't know how you would surpass it. I've come from the manufacturing industry in the U.S. and Canada in the car areas, worked with some car guys, but they were really good like maybe 40 years ago. But right now, I think this is the place to be.
You're listening to Enterprise, and that was Charles Thomas, CEO at The Hangout, talking about the stuff that goes on inside the Imagineering Institute, which is a facility that aims to invent the future of the internet. And there's more to come after the break. We're not done yet, so stay tuned. This is Arvind Yuvaraj, BFM 89.9.
Before Friday materializes, BFM 89.9.
This is Enterprise with Arvind Yuvaraj, and my guest on today's show, as mentioned, is Charles Thomas from the Imagineering Institute, the world's first startup incubation space that's inside a research facility. Whenever the subject of technology or the internet pops up, there's always the debate of will the human element be lost? And I think I've asked this to a bunch of people already at Echelon 2017, but will the human element be lost as technology takes over in these fields in the future? So what is your take on that?
Yeah, good question. There's a lot of talk about that. But through time, we've always evolved, and when one job leaves, other jobs kind of take its place. I mean, I was just, again, looking at a couple of things that people were showing today, the last 2 days, you'll see these are markets that are opening up for thousands of jobs that are going to kind of come from different areas, and the newer jobs will probably be a life where there's a bit more leisure through your day, because the job is probably going to be a bit more easier, because most of the heavy lifting type jobs are going to be done by robots. But the human aspect is interesting too, and we talked about this, that there was a question on the travel group yesterday. They said if we're digitizing the senses and creating virtual worlds with VR, that you don't have to go there, will that stop people from wanting to experience the real thing? Is that related to this question we're talking about?
But I
asked the guys at my office, and it was a funny one from Adrian actually had the best one, and he said, and it was actually done in a pointed way. It said, Charlie, you and I both know that everyone would prefer to, they would pay more to see an orangutan in the wild than an orangutan at the zoo. And I thought that was apropos for, it's a great statement, because we will always want to see a more authentic experience. There was actually another person who was one of our research fellows from Sri Lanka originally, but she pointed out that technology is just another way to look at experience, in the same way that poetry was just another way to look at experience. But they will always be a different situation than the actual authentic experience. So I think in the end, it will just make the authentic experience more special.
Right. There are two sides to the evolution of tech and digital media. So one is the good and one is the bad, right? What would you say is the bad side to rapidly evolving tech? Like tech that explodes too fast for us to even contain anymore.
For instance, we're using technology right now to live healthier lifestyles, right? I mean, WALL-E was an example by Disney where directed to guys like you and I who are going, I know that's wrong. That's why I'm going to live more in a healthier manner. But I think evolution, there's it's always got two sides. There's always the yin and yang. It's all almost it goes back to Newtonian physics. I think everything that happens, something else disappears, right? And then there's a balance, and there's decisions that we make on how we do things, right? We're talking about movies a lot. I saw, for the first time, I saw all the three Matrix shows in a row, right? And at the very end, the climax was he made a decision. No matter what, all this crazy stuff that's going on, the actual inner person in the final situation makes the final decision. And I think a lot of the stuff we do, it's really important that person gets to make a decision at the end of whatever we're doing. That's, I think, the thing that sells it. Because people, I notice a lot of people instinctively, and I wonder if it's just our culture as it grows, they don't want to be controlled. Like the whole idea of Big Brother, that when it came out in Huxley's book, that's a long time ago, right? But right away, that was an instinct that in the end, no matter what we do, it's only going to work if we can make the decisions in the end.
You said that you're a startup yourself. The Imaginary Institute is a startup incubation space, but it also behaves and functions as a startup. So how does that work as a business? Like you say, monetization isn't the idea, but you also look towards projects that have monetization potential, no? What's the model that Imaginary Institute works on?
Yeah, I think everyone has their own styles. I have complete freedom because one of the things is I come from, in Canada, I worked for a fellow who's known as one of the smartest, most innovative people in the world. And this is true of what I've learned because I've done this, and it's true of everyone with ideas. They mentioned a clause. He said, every day this fellow, he works up with 10 ideas. He wakes up, he's got 10 ideas. And by the way, he's 80 years old. And he says, one is a genius idea, and one is just the world's worst idea, and eight are just average. And he says, the joke was that the only problem is he doesn't know which is which. And honest, that is how ideas work, because he would come and he'd throw out his ideas, and you can't tell. So you never take any idea for granted. So if someone comes in and they have their idea, I'm more interested in that they use their own energy, their own idea. I'm really concerned that their idea is related to a passion that they have, and that they're actually, you know, they're emotionally invested in it, and they're solving a problem that they have. And that problem, then I look at it and I confirm, yeah, everybody has that problem. So let's do it. And the way they do it probably won't be the way I would do it, but I don't tell them to do it my way. I'm hands off, and then I watch. I see where it's going. And then I help them more with the fundamentals I talked about. Those aren't objective. They're very subjective. You just have to hit these milestones, and then you can make a business. But I never can tell if that idea is going to go or not until eventually someone puts money down at the very end of the idea.
right? So at the top of the program, I asked you a very big question. What is the future of internet? And based on the answers given by Charles Thomas during this interview, we can safely say that the future seems wider and more promising than we can possibly bottle into a 30-minute program, and more complex and more complicated as well. The stuff that goes on inside the Imaginary Institute sounds amazing. It sounds like a very, very, very promising place. And if you'd like to keep in touch with their work, just check out imagineeringinstitute.org. Of course, if you miss part of the interview with Charles Thomas that I just did, he is the CEO of the Hangout and one of the people alongside Professor Adrian who powered this facility. You can check out this podcast. You can stream it again on the BFM app, which is, of course, available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. And right now, it's available on Apple's CarPlay as well. This has been Arvind Yuvraj on Enterprise. Resource Center is up next, so stay tuned. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.